Nancy Pelosi just bought millions of call options on Palo Alto Networks, the cybersecurity company. Now, she has an amazing track record of somehow, miraculously, picking the best stocks to buy and making absolutely millions of dollars buying call options. Now, we're going to dive into the cash flow, the hard jack that this company makes to figure out if Palo Alto Networks is worth buying now that it's up over $300 a share. We're going to take a look at the cash flow one pager. We're going to look at their annual reports, where they report billions of dollars in stock-based comp paid to their employees, not the shareholders. And we're going to take a look at the most recent earnings release to see how much jack this company makes if you bought today, held it for a decade, how much money do you think you can make? You ready? Let's get to work. Welcome to Rational Investing. My name is Cameron Stewart, CFA. Thank you very much for watching the channel, all the comments and subscribers. I greatly appreciate it. Please hit the subscribe button. It helps me out. On this channel, we are focused on cash flow, hard jack. How much cash do companies make? And can you buy a business for a reasonable amount of cash flow that over time will compound and hopefully grow your fortune? That's the idea in the stock market. That's what we kind of hunt for here. And we try to sift through a lot of the noise, a lot of the accounting jargon to come up with what is the true root cash of a business and what we think a reasonable assumption will be going forward to value that company. Now, we do that based on five key attributes that we use to judge each company that we use then to kind of warrant further due diligence. Those five key attributes are as follows. Number one, top line revenue, we want that growing. Number two, earnings growth, enterprise level earnings need to be growing. Number three, strong free cash flow. Number four, low debt. And number five, a well-priced stock. A well-priced stock is simply a stock that, given a simple growth assumption, will outperform the market. That's it. Easy said, hard to do. Let's take a look at now Palo Alto Networks. As I referenced at the outset, Nancy Pelosi has purchased a lot of call options on this stock. She has recently done it with Google and several other big name stocks where she has made absolutely millions and millions of dollars buying stocks that she happens to be kind of dealing with on some of the council meetings that she's in Congress. That's up to her and how she handles it in the SEC if they want to take a look into that. They've maintained that that's legal, but this timing of all of her trades are very suspect. But nevertheless, let's take a look at Palo Alto Networks and figure out how much cash they make and what we think the fair price for the stock might be. Behind me, I've pulled up their Q2 fiscal year 2024 earnings call. I'm going to flip through this really quickly to give you a feel for the company. We'll then dive into the annual statement. There's a couple things I want to pull out, and I'll show you then the cash flow one pager that we put out mid-2013 last year. Safe Harbor plan. Very first slide, the smiling face for the CEO and chairman. Now, I always love when investor decks or presentation decks show management in giant, giant face pictures rather than cash flow. I always think it's interesting that a manager would even choose to put themselves out there that much on a deck when really the first slide should be free cash flow, in my opinion, and then the backup to it. But it's a sales deck like all investor relations decks, and so you get kind of the big mugshot of the executive team, the powerful executive team, to inspire you to buy the stock. But they do have very good results here in some of the top line numbers and some of the recurring members, large customer demographics. Like those numbers here are strong, and they had a very good year last year, at least quarter over quarter. Total revenue, just shy of $2 billion, up 19% year over year. Outstanding growth. They've got a lot of performance obligations that they have to fill. Annual recurring revenue up 50% year over year. That's really, really strong. They've got adjusted free cash flow non-GAAP, which I think is really interesting. We'll cover that in a second. $655 million last quarter with earnings per share and margin. So all of this is actually pretty good. They're displaying information. They've got free cash flow, although it is non-GAAP. I would have liked to have had GAAP of cash flow non-adjusted, because what they're doing here is they're adding back share-based comp and some other things, which I think kind of masks a little bit of the truth. But overall, pretty solid numbers. They go into kind of customer concentration, which I like. So lots of accounts over $1 million. They've got 10 accounts over 20 million. So that gives you a breakdown that they have kind of a diverse customer base. Then it continues on forward to break down their various the business attributes, the various business segments with pretty good detail. I want to skip through to the financials. So the financials, CFO, giant mugshot, let's go. Here they actually beat earnings. So 2024 Q2 earnings $2.35 billion, 16% growth year over year. They beat guidance there. And then they got total revenue here. Excuse me, that was total billings. Total revenue just shy of $2 billion, up 19% year over year. And then the earnings target here, $1.46 in earnings versus guidance of $1.23 of earnings. Let's see what's built up in this non-GAAP earnings number for a second so we kind of smell check what we're looking at. All right, let's take a look at the adjusted GAAP earnings. It's always in the appendix. It's always very in the back. We can scroll through. You want to look for a page that will typically say GAAP to non-GAAP reconciliation of EPS. It's always in the back. They will usually begin with either their stated non-GAAP or their GAAP and kind of work to the other. In this case, they're saying GAAP net income per share fully diluted, $4.89, a very strong number in the Q of Q2 2024. They then add back various other components, 88 cents in this instance of share-based comp, related acquisition costs, some various other non-cash litigation charges, and then they remove a giant amount of money for income tax that they're withholding because they did make a ton of money last quarter in terms of the total dollar amount, and so that's the provision for taxes. And then what they're left with is $1.46 per share in non-GAAP earnings that they report on their financial statement. Let's go take a look at the full income statement. All right, so here's the full income statement for Palo Alto Networks. Last full fiscal year, total revenue, $6.892 billion. Really, really big. And that's up about $1.2 billion year over year. Very strong growth for them on the year over year basis. They've got cost of revenue here, products and subscription costs for a gross profit of just shy of $5 billion, up almost $1.2 billion. So margin about the same, but that revenue growth that they had basically trickled all the way through on the gross profit side. I like to see that. Then they've got research and development, sales and marketing, and general admin. This general admin's pretty low, actually. $447 million for a company that's doing north of $6.5 billion of revenue. It's a pretty good number. Heavy research and development, heavy sales and marketing to kind of sell their wares, but overall they're profitable, and they made $387 million of operating profit. You can see a little bit of interest expense. Income before taxes, $566 million. Then they've got the provision for taxes, $126 million, for a total net income of $439 million. And you've got your fully diluted earnings per share, $1.45 or $1.28 on a per share basis. Pretty strong numbers. Let's move through the cash flow statement. I do want to show you something that I think is interesting. If we go to the cash flow statement, cash flow always begins with net income, comes down to operating income is the first third. But before we get there, we come across this share-based compensation award, equity award to employees, $1 billion. That's been almost $1 billion every single year for the last year. And I'll remind you that the revenue for this business is $6.5 billion. Let's go back and take a look. Top line revenue, $6.9 billion. They're giving away $1 billion of that. That's like 13% of total revenue that they're giving away in terms of stock-based compensation to their employees, which is a lot. So $1 billion in $6.9 billion. Yeah, it's 15%. That's 15% of revenue they're giving away in stock awards, which I think is excessive. And it's hidden when they do the adjusted earnings, when they report cash flow, because it's non-cash, and when they report their non-GAAP earnings, they're adjusting that out, which I think is wrong. They should expense it or leave it as an expense, even though it's non-cash, to show more of the real impact of dilution over time is to give $1 billion to their employees. All right, let's dive into now the cash flow one pager and make a forecast for Palo Alto. All right, behind me is the cash flow one pager. We published this at the Cash Flow Club. You can see that on my website, cashflowinvestingpro.com. Here we go. We've got 10 years of financial information for Palo Alto. You can see how their revenue has built, how earnings have turned from negative into positive, and how the cash generation is really beginning to form in this company. I will say that the cash flow from operations here, we adjust, we expense share-based compensation as cash because it's dilutive, and I want to see what the cash flow of the business looks like if they had to turn that into actual cash compensation for their employees. So here you go. Revenue for the business in 2013 was $396 million, and that has grown remarkably to $5.5 billion last fiscal year. This is in 2022 when it ended. I just showed you 2023's number, 6.9, so that's up even more. The company's continuing to grow. That's an average annual rate of 34% of an annual average growth on top line revenue, which is very, very strong. EBITDA, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. This is the enterprise level earnings. You can pick EBIT, you can pick operating income. You really just want to get an idea of enterprise level whole earnings. And that's grown from negative 50 million, say in 2013 and 14, to a positive 400 million in 2021, 463 million in 22, and that number is north of 500 million in 2023. So that continues to grow nicely. The CAGR here, I can't calculate because it's negative to positive, but it's very, very strong as it turned from negative to positive during the last decade. Great job, team, growing revenue and growing margin. Let's go to excess cash. They have about $1.5 billion in excess cash. They do have debt, which is about $4 billion. I'd like to see them pay that debt down. When I look at a leverage ratio of debt to EBITDA, they are north of what we consider to be 3x leverage is max. They're at 5.4. So I would like to see them bring that down in line. Market cap has absolutely exploded following revenue growth. It's basically trading on revenue growth. Revenue is 34% annual growth rate. Market cap and enterprise value is 36, 37 respectively. So that's growing in line with revenue as this business has been trading mainly off of the headline number. Enterprise value EBITDA, this is kind of a relative value metric of total enterprise value divided by annual earnings to give kind of a multiple years that you would need to run the business to pay for itself. You can see early in the decade it's negative when earnings were negative, so that's kind of a nonsensical number. As earnings turn positive, however, with a $20 to $50 billion enterprise value and a roughly $400 million of EBITDA, the multiple here is roughly 100x earnings. So if the business did not grow at all, you're paying 100 years forward in earnings in a price tag for this business, which is extremely rich. So you're basically locking yourself into a growth forecast saying that if you buy the stock, you are absolutely guaranteeing that they're going to have rapid growth for at least a decade while you hold this business, which for the most part has been true. So people are just looking in the past and saying, I'll stretch it forward. And you're paying a premium, you're assuming that growth rate. So in order for you to get a good return, in my opinion, that growth has to exceed the market expectation of growth, or you have to hold it for a very, very long time. So that's the very value checks for revenue, checks the box, and earnings as both of those are growing. Free cash flow, right where the rubber meets the road, this is following earnings nicely. So you can see cash flow from operations, adjusted cash flow from operations are growing 34% annualized over the last decade from $71 million to just shy of $1 billion in 22, expensing stock-based comp. And that falls in line with kind of this fast growth we're seeing in revenue and EBITDA. So I think that's true. CapEx is relatively small, so there's a good margin between cash flow from operations and CapEx. They can afford every year to reinvest in the business. That's why I like to see them buy their debt down a little bit. There's plenty of cash flow here. And what they're doing is they're issuing shares out to their employees at a very, very high rate of speed. Early in this decade, they had 200 million shares outstanding. Now they have almost 300 million as of 2022. In 2023, that has gone up even more. So in the last decade, they have issued 50% more shares than they had outstanding 10 years ago, which is an average annual rate of 4% of growth in their shares, which is a staggering amount. And I would like to see them stop that, let this cash flow through to the shareholders and stop issuing so much shares, or at the very least, buy them back so that they'd stop this growth rate. All right, when that flows through to per share value, the share, at least 2 years ago, was trading at $167 a share. It's now north of $300. It's basically a 1% yield multiple, or yield. The stock price itself is so high relative to earnings. It's trading at 100 times earnings multiple. And the stock price is so high relative to free cash flow, which is roughly $2 to $3 last year. It's now about $4.50 if I look at today with 2023 numbers. But the stock price is north of $300, so it's still at a 1% free cash flow yield. If you and I are looking at buying free cash flow and are not willing to pay for the premium that goes along with high growth companies, it's hard to wrap your mind around paying that much forward for a stock or buying a stock with so little free cash flow as a yield. Let's take a look at what we can forecast for this business and see, does it pencil out? So we can take a forecast for 2023 and say EBITDA is going to be $1.7 billion. Now, they've had their EBITDA number. We missed this number a little bit because EBITDA for 2023 has already come in. Free cash flow, we were a little high too. We're at 560. I think they were at 480. Depends if you pay down debt or not. But in either case, I think we are a little too high on our estimate. But nevertheless, you're assuming that they're going to continue to grow. So the long-term target, you're saying they need EBITDA $3.5 billion out 10 years from now, or free cash flow of $11 out 10 years from now. You apply some market multiples and yields to that, and I get a stock price in the range of $285. Now, the stock is already $315 after Nancy Pelosi bought her call options, and the stock market ripped because everyone's following her, you know, mystical advice or mystical powers of buying stock. So the stock could actually continue to rip. It does appear to me that it's detached from cash flow generation and people are really buying it because other people are buying it. That tends to have kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, as George Soros would put it. And stocks tend to spool up because of that. So there might be an interesting buy if you're just interested in momentum. If you're looking at it from a fundamental basis, I think the stock price is too high. As you can see, our analysis here was pointing away from it, saying it was going to underperform, albeit, you know, the whims of the market as people want to buy whatever they're going to buy. But from a cash flow basis, it definitely doesn't meet the mark. Let's review the five key attributes and see what we have here. Number one, top line revenue growth. Yes, it's growing. Number two, and our EBITDA, yes, it's growing. Number three, strong free cash flow, absolutely. Number four, low debt, no. Number five, well-priced, no. Those two things, for me, give it a bad. I can't recommend it based on a pure cash flow analysis. It's not a stock that is going to yield a tremendous amount of cash right now, and I would pass on it. This is rational investing, so we are therefore forced to confine our analysis into a box. If you're a trader, if you're looking to do something else, that's entirely your game. This is kind of a conservative cash flow analysis. Let's go find a stock we can buy and own for 20 years, 30 plus years, and have it kind of clip off coupons for us and protect our principal. And paying for earnings out 100 years is simply not prudent. And we're going to pass and wait for the market price to come back down to make it more risk adjusted for us. So this is Rational Investing. My name is Cameron Stewart, CFA. If you like what you're saying, greatly appreciate it. Hit the subscribe button. Throw me a comment down below for the algorithm. Always helps out. If you're interested in learning more, I do teach a couple courses on my website, cashflowinvestingpro.com. I teach one where I teach you how to forecast stocks just like you saw behind you, where you can read what an EBITDA is, how to get free cash flow, how to calculate total debt, all those things, and build a forecast. I also, as a profession, I'm a CFO. I run companies for private equity, and I teach analysts. If you want to be an analyst, if you want to learn to get investment banking, if you want to work at a private equity guild or a hedge fund, I can teach you how to run Excel, build three-statement financial models, and be able to apply for a position at a company like that and pass one of their entrance tests, one of which is they give you a simple balance sheet, income statement, cash flow, and they say, build me a financial model. You have 30 minutes. That's inside the interview process at many investment banks. And if you can do that, you have put yourself up in a new category of people that can do that. And so I teach you exactly how you do how to do that, and I give you the tools that you're going to need. So those are the two courses. You can also join the Cashflow Club, where myself and analysts publish analysis like this that we think are interesting on a regular basis. And for instance, I just released a new insurance company that has an ROE of over 15%, and I think you could get a 20% IRR out of this stock, because it's absolutely crushing the spread between the interest premiums and the runoffs, as well as printing about $1 billion a year in its on the return on the float that it has. So it's a very interesting investment that I tossed in the Cashflow Club for those that are members. Once again, thank you for watching the channel. I greatly appreciate it. This is Palo Alto Networks on a cash flow basis. It doesn't meet the mark, but we'll see if Nancy Pelosi is right. Her track record is amazing, so I look forward to seeing her results when she files them. Okay, thank you very much. Take care, bye-bye for now.